Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo. Buying a car can be a stressful experience. TrueCar.com is changing that forever. Simple, fair, and a fun way to buy a car. TrueCar users save time and money, helping them to never overpay.
You know you get the fair price because they show you what others paid for the car you're looking for. TrueCar analyzes what people are paying for their cars in your market and shares it with consumers so they never have to overpay.
Genius. Over a million cars have been sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and users see an average savings of $3,046 off MSRP. Drew, stifle yourself. Three steps here.
All right.
Go to TrueCar.com. Yeah. All right was not stifling yourself. Go to TrueCar.com. Find out what other people paid.
Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings certificate.
Then take it to the TrueCar Certified Dealer for a hassle-free buying experience.
Save time, save money, never overpay. TrueCar.com.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Pat O'Brien is Adam Carolla of this show.
I like that.
That's right. He opens every show with that. And he also closes every show with thank you and mahalo. And the first – people don't know that the reason the mahalo entered the lexicon was – I don't remember if he and I were talking about it or we ended up talking about it – is that when you – if you ever go to Hawaii for the first time, the one word they don't tell you about is mahalo. They tell you about aloha and
– mahalo is thank you.
Poo-poo. Right? And when you get there, when you get to Hawaii, the first thing that the flight attendants say is mahalo, mahalo, mahalo. You get there – all the trash cans say mahalo, and the McDonald's marquee say thank you and mahalo. And you have no idea what it means. Does it mean trash? Does it mean thank you for coming to your business? You have no idea what it means because no one ever tells you. Everyone knows what aloha means, right? It's kind of high, but mahalo as they're leaving, is it goodbye? Goodbye? I thought it was goodbye at first.
The first time I ever went to Amsterdam,
yeah.
I'm getting a tour. I have a guide and we're doing some sports event there, I think speed skating or something. And so I'm getting like a tour and where the aqueducts are and everything. And I'm looking at all these row houses, and I said, I said, wow, this neighborhood, is it all one family? And they said, why? I said, because the same name is on every mailbox. And they said, no, that means mail.
That's funny. That's good.
I said, oh, yeah, okay.
Got it. Check. So Pat O'Brien, obviously the Pat O'Brien Show. Check it out every Tuesday on iTunes and thepatobrienshow.com. New book is I'll Be Right Back After This, available on pre-order on Amazon. And click through the banner at drdrew.com. Also support the people that support these podcasts. Carolla is out doing his film, and when he comes back, he'll be checking everything twice and making sure that we've been maintaining his business. So please help me support the pirate ship. Pat's website is thepatobrienshow.com, and the Twitter handle is at P-O-B at
– the ugliest website ever, by the way.
At P-O-B right. Pat – at P-O-B Pat O'Brien. There
right.
it is.
My book is called I'll Be Back Right After This.
Oh, what did I say? After this?
No, I don't know what you said.
Yeah.
But it's a very – and Drew hadn't read it. I can't wait for you to read it
because
you're actually in there a bunch of times. But right. It's a – it's getting huge notoriety among the book publishers, saying it's very honest and everything.
Great.
And I go through pretty much I go through everything from Joel O'Brien to Sean O'Brien to
are
the
you,
end.
Are you going to be touring around talking about it?
Yeah.
When is that?
In fact, it's a featured book at the New York Book Convention, which is like, as you know, having the best gadget at the CES. So I'm there. I'm speaking there. It comes out in August. But there'll be a big lead up to it and everything.
How did I get a full copy so soon if it's not out till August?
You got a review copy. That's it's going to be hardcover.
Oh, okay, okay.
But you just got to read it.
Because it looks
copy.
Finished. I mean, it looks like, pretty much done.
What you have is pretty much done,
yeah.
Including the part where we named the person who put my voicemail on the internet.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you know her.
Yeah, I'd heard. I think you told me this before. Yeah. Do I still know her, right?
Yes.
Yeah, crazy. Not by the way, nothing I've ever discussed with anybody, even you. So.
No, I get it. No, yeah. but it's more – the book is more about show business and coming up and changing pop culture, and certainly a lot about how you can get so entitled that you think you're too big to fail. There's maybe two pages on the scandal, and at the end, everything is my fault, and I somehow, thanks to Dr. Drew and others, was able to overcome, and now I'm back. I'll be back right after this. See, after this part is almost dying.
Do you talk about also the broadcasting and some of those
everything,
stories,
yeah. All the stories and sports and entertainment.
Oh,
and by the way, if you're a sports, it's really kind of a sports history book.
I was going to say, do you know that when Adam and I first met you, we were so jealous of you because you said, you know, it was when you were doing Major League Baseball.
Right.
And you said, we were like, oh my God, this is the best life ever. You said, yeah, I tour around, I broadcast Major League Baseball, which we already were jealous of. And then the off season, I read. I read books.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. So both of us were like,
a lot of downtime. I'm a reader. I really am a reader. But in the book, I talk about when they handed me baseball. Suddenly I became the host of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Now my credentials, and I said to myself in the book, the way I write it was, I'm thinking these fucking guys have just handed me the national pastime. And my credentials are I grew up in South Dakota where there is no baseball. My other credential is that I got drunk a lot with Mickey Mantle. And that was about it. I was good on television, but I did that for 4 years. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
There must have been something else.
That was it. They didn't know because I had really no expertise in baseball. Nothing. I grew up in South Dakota, the only sporting event we had with the Globetrotters.
Anybody knows you knows how super smart you were, but you must have studied up to impress the shit out of them before you got the job.
No, I was just a good host. You know, I was hosting. But you can't study sports, just like you can't study your profession. You can't start out.
You have to kind of experience it.
It's like reading the paper.
You
read the New England Journal and you pick up things and that sort of thing.
Well, no, you have to be there when things are happening to understand how to contextualize other things you read about.
It's cumulative.
Yeah.
It's
experiential.
You know, you can't just
read about it.
You can't just – people say to me, how do I be a sportscaster? I said, now? No. Sorry. Too late.
Yeah.
You have to grow up with it, be involved in it.
So how did you do it?
With baseball, I was lucky. They handed me Tommy Lasorda to be my partner, and then I had Reggie Jackson for a while and Jim Cott for a while. And so, you know, as Brent used to say, how hard can it be to say, I'm Brent Musburger, let's go down to Pat O'Brien.
Yeah.
So you have these things. And of course, I did know some things about it. But,
yeah.
But it was fun. We had those great years, 90, 91, 92, 93, and 94. With the great Kirby Puckett home run and all those great games with Toronto and Atlanta. And so we were very fortunate to have all that. So it was a lot of fun for me.
I strangely had dinner with Joe Torre a couple nights ago.
Great
what
guy.
A great guy. Very different than what I expected him to be. So I thought he'd be much gruffer and tougher, you know, because you see him as the manager on the field.
Talk about measured. I mean, Joe thinks about everything he says,
yep.
And I've known Joe for years. You just want – when you leave him, you want to be around him. He's like John Wooden a little bit. He's got a lot of wisdom, and he's funny, he's good, and he's very smart.
I don't know if you ever met his wife, Allie, but she's also very sweet, and they have this domestic violence thing they're working on.
That's
I wish I remember the name of it. It's like
– No, that's his thing. We'll get it before the show's over.
Yeah,
but that's he does a lot of that. I just did a thing with him. Speaking of – we were talking about dogs during the commercial – where he was helping out Tony La Russa, who does this big rescue dog thing.
Let's do dogs, as long as you're talking about that. Is that a transition?
That's okay? A good one.
All right, let's talk about
it. Would be speaking of dogs.
Our friends at, speaking of dogs, let's talk about our friends at BarkBox. Always bite off more than you can chew with BarkBox. Monthly box of 4 to 6 full-size products, durable toys, leashes, treats, more, and food. 100% natural elk, caribou, wild boar, other lean wild meats keeps the dog really healthy. There's a 3-month plan. There are 3 monthly plans tailored to your dog's size, so it's appropriate to your dog. Put that up there again, Chris. I didn't see it. Or Gary. because we're trying to remember Joe Torre's. Go ahead.
Finish your read, please.
Okay. Three-monthly plans tailored to your dog's size. BarkBox, committed to helping homeless dogs as well. 10% of the revenues goes to shelters across U.S. and Canada. And you will save 20% on your new subscription if you visit BarkBox.com/Adam. That is BarkBox.com/Adam for your 20% discount. Yeah, on subscribing. This is a good thing. And if you have a dog, you know what I'm talking about. They love their treats and they would love these wild natural meats. What do you got there, Gary? Oh, there he is. Joe Torre, Safe at Home.
That's what it is.
Safe at Home is the organization. It's basically an organization that puts social workers in the schools and gets kids sort of talking about things that happens at home and intervene in homes where there's domestic violence, which is exceedingly common today. Another thing about books, in addition to I'll Be Right Back After This, Bob Bryan's book is out now, is it not?
It sure is.
Yeah, Shrinkage.
Shrinkage. It is a good book. He did what episode with me here? Where he talks about it, and I gloat about the book a little bit. And if you have anybody with serious illness in your family or you yourself have suffered and you're having frustration with the medical system, I recommend this read. He really does go into great – give some great little insights on stuff that could be helpful to anyone who is dealing with the system. So episode 101 is where Brian and I talk about that. You can click through at adamanddrdrewshow.com. What? Click through to what? To get the book?
To Amazon, by the way.
Get the Amazon, but it's Dr. Drew Show, episode 101. You have to go to drdrew.com to get that. All right, Pat. So there we go. When that comes out, that's going to be an interesting time for you.
Did you do the audio part of your book? Did you do an audio
book? I did an audio book for the narcissism book. The book.
How long did it take?
Oh, I think it was a couple of days. You had to have a producer sitting there like hammering on you. It's hard.
God.
It's hard. He has a recording thing back here.
No, we'll do it here.
Yeah.
We'll do it here. Be a good way to read the book again, I guess, right? I find that even though I wrote this book,
yeah,
I keep thinking, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have done that.
Absolutely.
Keep saying, that's normal. You're too close to it.
And when you read it out loud, you go, oh, my God. You have two reactions. You're like, hey, that sounds good. I forgot I wrote that.
Right.
And you're like, oh, crap. That's unclear. I shouldn't have said it that way. Right. Reading it out loud is an entirely different experience than just reading it again. It's a very strange experience. I found it both made me happy and sad. There's a lot of stuff I liked, a lot of stuff I didn't like.
All right. Well, I can't wait for you to read it because I want to get your reaction to
right.
it. But
I promise you I'll get to it.
But it's a trip writing it, I'll tell you that, especially me.
Well, coming out with it, I bet it's going to be intense. You know, people are going to be reacting.
It'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah.
A lot of people are fighting over the magazine rights now and movie, and it's an exciting time now.
Oh, that's cool.
But then, you know. And I do admit I drop a lot of names, but then I say, listen, I've been around 35 years. You're going to meet some people.
Do you have to worry about anybody
no.
having an issue? Have you gotten permission from everybody?
No. But it's been vetted. We've had like 10 lawyers look at it. Well, pretty harsh on a couple people, but nothing that they
– Whom shall we look forward to being scrutinized? Can you say?
Not really.
Okay. Well, that's – I've got to read the book.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
I mean – I'm pretty harsh on a couple people, but most everybody, it's just experiences, you know, what they taught me and what we did, and you know, hanging out with Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Nicky Mantle.
You've had an interesting life.
All these people, meeting Jonas Salk and actually being able to thank him because I had I was told anyway that I had polio when I was a kid.
Really?
And then the Jonas Salk, you know, vaccine came out, and I met him much later. Was able to thank him. Mayor Daley, the old man, introducing me to Anwar Sadat, who liked me. And so when the King Tut exhibit came to Chicago, he took me through it himself. Stuff like that.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's kind of like a Forrest Gump deal.
Yeah. It sounds like some of it does, yeah.
Well, when you read it, people are going, after I finished it, I said, how in the hell did I do all this?
Yeah.
And in the last, you know, no wonder I drank. That should have been the name of it.
That's the sequel.
Yeah.
All right. We've got some letters out there that people have been sending in through the website, theadamanddrdrewshow.com. Chris Maxipat is going to present a couple to us. We've also got some phone calls, but let's start with a letter.
All right. This one comes from Aaron from Illinois. Hey, guys. Love the shows. Haven't heard you touch on adoption at length yet. My parents told me I was adopted when I was 4 years old. I've always thought of them as my parents anyways, as they took me home when I was just 7 days old. There was a court battle when I was a toddler with my birth parents wanting me back.
Oof.
My adoptive parents won. Oof. Now that I'm 28, I have the urge to reach out and at least know my heritage and medical background. I think it would be nice to meet my birth parents, but I feel it is gravely disrespectful to my parents. I know both of you have a stance on not opening Pandora's box, but I think that if I could be prepared for the worst, then I can only be pleasantly surprised. What do you think?
What do you think, Pat?
I think 4 years old, a little early to do that to a four-year-old kid. Because how does a four-year-old
process that
and compress it? On the other hand, when my son was in school, he had a friend who was adopted. And I think a lot of kids didn't know that. We did because they were good friends of ours. But he got up one day. They were just talking about diseases, you know, in fifth grade, whatever.
Yes.
And he said, I'm adopted. And how do I know if I'm not an alcoholic have cancer?
That's right.
That's a really
important
and valid issue on finding your birth parents.
And that's what he brings up, because what my medical background is.
Yeah, what your genes.
And while what by not opening Pandora's box, what's the caller, the writer's name?
Aaron.
Aaron, is that a female, I guess?
Male, AA.
AA. Aaron, what we mean by not opening Pandora's box is don't expect anything to be solved by finding your birth parents. It's usually a disappointment. And in your case, it sounds like you've had great parenting your whole life. You sound like a well-put-together person, even in the little sort of brief sort of material you're giving us in this letter about yourself. It just sounds like you're kind of together. And so to do it for the right reasons, I don't object to that. And you're right. If you really understand that it's probably going to be a letdown, and if it turns out to be more than that, okay. It's interesting you didn't you didn't describe a longing for them. You didn't describe always feeling like you wondered what was going on. I think you also didn't describe feeling sort of unwanted by your biological family of origin. It's interesting that in your particular history they actually had a court battle trying to get you back. I wonder if that has something to do with it. But I'd say do it. I'd say although you know, to get that medical history, like Pat's saying.
Yeah, but I would be prepared. And of course, I'm an expert on none of this. Just make sure everybody knows that. But I would also be prepared for it's not just about you. You're going to affect a lot of people.
That's a great point. The
people that are raising you. And I'm just saying this.
Well, I would get their blessing. I would get blessing from the adopted parent, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, I would.
Yeah,
but some parents might say, okay, if you want them, go be with them. You have to open yourself up to that.
I can't imagine that. But he's saying it'd be disrespectful to his adoptive parents.
There might be some jealousy involved. And by the way, I've always thought about this. Then what do you do?
Afterwards.
After
you meet.
It's like
– do you have a relationship? Do you spend lots of time with
them? It's like having sex with a coworker.
Now what?
Which I've never done, but just so you know. Right? And it's like
– yeah, it's now what?
Now things have changed here.
Yeah.
Now what?
And there might be other brothers and sisters. I'm certainly no expert either in this, but I've been around a number of people that have done this. And most of them feel – again, once they're adult and he's 28
years
old – talking
about sex or the finding the parents?
No, the finding the parents.
Okay. All right.
They usually feel pretty good about it. As long as everyone is supportive, including your adoptive parents, I think there's not a big downside in cases like Aaron's. If you're a 16-year-old who feels empty and pissed and doesn't like your adoptive parents and feels anxiety and your sense of self is
– that's a whole other deal.
That's a whole other thing. Then I'm not sure I would
That's running away from home stuff there.
Yeah, I would not open that. That's a Pandora's box.
I found out during – this is in my book. I found out during I inherited some money from one of my aunts who worked at the phone company her entire life, and then she drank her salary down in Iowa. So what'd she make, $40 a week or whatever back in the 40s and 50s? So I get a call in the middle of the night, or 10:30 at night, and they says, "This is Pat O'Brien, this is Detective so-and-so." And I go, "God, now what?"
What have I done?
Yeah, I did. I said, "God, now what?" And I said, "No, your aunt, somebody who had never heard of, has died. She left the money to your father, but he's dead, so now it goes to you and your sister." I'm thinking, how much could she have? I mean, and it turns out that she had almost $1 million.
Oh,
because
my God.
Ma Bell would give them stock.
Wow.
You know, they'd say, "Here's $40 a week, but here's 2 shares of stock." So anyway, long story short, By the time we got through with all the estate problems, I found out that one of the people that I thought was my aunt was really my sister.
Oh, my God.
I found out that my dad had been married five times, not two.
Whoa.
I found out that there were brother it was the most insane thing. And as it turned out, everybody got like 70. Well, first of all, I called my sister and said, you can have all mine. I've got money, because she doesn't have much. But the point of this is I'm looking at this probate thing, and I thought, do I want to get in touch with these people? Why haven't they gotten in touch with me? Because it's not hard to know where I am.
Yeah.
I just dropped it. I said, keep the money. I didn't want to get involved in a family that I had at my age, that I had
these half siblings?
Yeah, my dad would marry somebody and then had two kids and
oh my God.
So there were five of them, and then my aunt I thought was my sister. Or my well, I thought.
So you thought it was his.
The person I thought was an aunt.
Who do you think she was related to? You thought it was your mom's?
No, not my mom. My mom had no part in this.
You thought it was your dad's sister?
No, I thought it was my dad's sister, but it was really my sister.
It was really your dad's daughter.
Yeah.
And she was a half
sister.
Wow.
it's all in the book. I mean, I write it in kind of an amusing way.
Wow. It's comical if you're willing to laugh at it.
But I, and to the point of these finding your parents, I did not have the energy to get involved in a whole new family.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense at a certain point.
No. And by the way, they know then the bitterness came in. They know where I've been.
Now they're pissed at you?
I'm on TV every day, you know, somewhere.
They're pissed at you for not coming
out?
No,
I'm pissed at them. If they wanted to find me, they could find me. So that's my story.
Interesting. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with a call after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat O'Brien. Either your grandfather, your father, or you grew up with me doing sports for the last 30 years, plus all the entertainment and pop culture things that I did, all those red carpets for you out there. Now, we're putting all that in a podcast, The Pat O'Brien Show. Go to iTunes and find it. Go to thepatobrienshow.com. We're here. We work for you on The Pat O'Brien Show. Thanks.
All right, it is the Adam and Drew, Dr. Drew podcast. New website, adamanddrdrewshow.com. Click through on that Amazon banner. Keep this thing afloat so when Adam returns from his illustrious film career, he will be satisfied with the work that Chris and Gary and I have done. Pat O'Brien is Adam in the meantime. And we're taking your calls, and this is Catherine. What's up, Catherine?
Hi, Dr. Drew. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I've had a question for a long time, and I need an opinion from somebody who is not my therapist or somebody who knows me, which is I was in therapy for years, and I lost my job. I sort of hit rock bottom in many ways, stopped going to therapy. I partly couldn't afford it, and I partly sort of couldn't get out of bed. And it was really strange, but a year later, I was doing great, and then everything started going really well for me. I felt really healthy. I was healthy for years, and then when I was pregnant, they had me see like a counselor, and I just from that one day of counseling and asking me about my background, I felt horrible for 5 or 6 days afterwards, and probably a week. And I'm wondering, should I just stay away from therapy, or is this going to come back, you know, to bite me? I really don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting. It's a great question. I imagine you're talking about childhood trauma. That's what you don't like talking about, right?
I couldn't put a pin on it. I guess I've had problems since I was a kid, but, you know, something would happen and then I would just fall apart. I wouldn't be functional. And then I was in New York City. I was downtown when the towers fell.
Oof.
And that's when I started going to therapy regularly.
And did they make you talk about that experience a lot?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See,
I'm upset now because I'm talking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, and I'm not going to – I don't want to poke at it any more than that. I promise I won't. But
No,
will.
I don't mean that. I'm just giving you an example. Like, see, as soon as I start talking about therapy or thinking about talking about these issues, I start to fall apart.
Yeah.
So maybe it's better just to not think about them. I don't know.
No. Usually not, but there is a lot of controversy in terms of how to conduct therapy and what works for people and what makes them better as opposed to worse and how deep to get into stuff and how much is it opening Pandora's box, to use the the jargon from our last letter. But the, particularly the heavy trauma of something like the World Trade Center, there's now really good therapies for that that are not designed in any way to make you relive or revivify the experience. It's a way of rewiring the trauma so you can think and talk about it without getting upset. There's a guy named – I would urge you strongly to look him up online. His name is Bessel van der Kolk, V-N-D-E-R-K-O-L-K. Catherine, can you, you got that from me?
Van der Kolk.
Bessel van der Kolk. That if you can get to him – I'm not sure where he's practicing right now – or one of his disciples, they literally have – they claim, and I believe them because I've been following his work for a long time, that for something like the what you're dealing with the World Trade Center and the way you're feeling about it, in as few as 8 visits can really rejigger that. And so it's sort of – the childhood stuff I can't – it takes a lot longer. But the heavy trauma of a single event like that can really be rewired now. So you're not carrying around that hypervigilance and that, you know, that all that stuff that comes up whenever you even think about it. That should be able to be treated.
This is Pat, and I'm not an expert on this either. But if you go back to the Abraham Maslows and even Freud, and you said something, Catherine, when you were talking about talking to other people, there's something to be said about talking just to friends.
Yep.
Or opening up and having somebody that you can confide in, and just as a way to get it out. You know, holding things in is never a good thing. But I think the
But sometimes avoiding.
I agree with you, except for I really, it's worked really well for me.
Well, sometimes.
Every time I've even had casual conversations about my childhood or anything, then I'm angry and upset for many days. I realize everybody says it's unhealthy, but do I need to go through that all the time?
What particularly makes you upset? And again, don't get into it if it's going to make you upset.
I just had really bad parents. I don't know. There's probably something partly wrong with my brain, too. But my mom is just a weird mom. She didn't hug. She didn't kiss. She didn't like us at all. She made fun of me. And my dad was just had a terrible, horrible temper. And,
How old are you?
40. I know. It should be over. And I
I'm just thinking of the time that you were raised. That's what when parenting was a whole lot different.
Yeah.
Right. And I know. Like I feel like my mom was a mom because everyone told her you have to be a mom and a wife, and she probably wouldn't have. You know.
Well, here's what I can't say. I can't say you have to talk about it. I can't say that. But I would urge you to deal with that second hit of the World Trade Center, because that all that explosive feeling is something that can be readily dealt with, and that might be contributing to some of your severe mood stuff and all that thing that kind of comes along. And that's what your question is: am I going to have trouble in the future? Because you're kind of okay now. I am not interested. Listen, personally, I love exploring the mind and really getting into stuff and doing more therapy. I'm just into it. But this means it's for everybody. If you're cool right now, you don't want to do any. You're better without it. Fantastic. But there is this other piece that and by the way, once you deal with that, you might be better able to deal with some of this other stuff.
Yeah, and also the rules of never make assumptions and don't take things personally. I said, how old are you? You said 40. You think I should be over it? No, I mean, you have to change the way you look at yourself. And I know this only because I was able to do that. It made a difference in my life.
There's something right there, Catherine, that Pat's talking about that kind of feels like I wish you could address, if nothing else, which is your feelings about yourself. You should be much more on your own team. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And that's something you can probably solve by yourself.
Hey, you sound like you're a very nice person.
Yeah, yeah. You should think more highly of yourself.
That is one thing I have solved. I didn't want to be an angry, mean parent like my parents, and I'm not.
Good.
Well done. Well done. All right, my dear. Thank you for that. Let's go on to letters. Chris. Multimedia event.
Yeah, I like this.
All right, here we go. This is from Liz. Hi, guys. I have a 16-year-old daughter who is gay. We have always told her to conduct herself in a certain way in public that she has to be aware of her surroundings.
What does that mean?
People can
What's her name?
This is Liz.
Liz Sterling? It's a joke. I'm sorry.
That's funny.
People can be and are assholes. Well, she invited her friend to a family birthday party and apparently wasn't acting appropriate, as in sitting too close. She may have touched her friend's hand. Well, of course, everyone in the family's in an uproar and have been calling me to complain that the kids saw her acting this way and are asking questions. There isn't much I can say but sorry. The problem is when I spoke to my daughter, she gets upset with me. She doesn't understand that she will always have to deal with this. She says it is just her friend and nothing else. Right now, she's in counseling with her father, and I worry about her safety. How do I explain to her How do I explain to her that we are fine with her being gay, but others will not be, so she has to act a certain way in public? We have another family get-together in a couple of weeks, and I'm dreading going because I know I will be confronted by my husband's angry family.
It's interesting because it really does sound like Sterling. It's like, don't you understand you can't be with those people in public? I mean, that's literally what he said. That's what she's saying.
We do have a cousin who is gay, but she hasn't attended any family events for years. Thank you for your time.
Oh, my God. Where's that from?
Oh, that's Liz from California. California?
We were talking.
I can't believe it.
We're not laughing at you, Liz. But we were just talking about this.
I'm outraged.
On another show about stigmas. If I were Liz, I mean, I think you have to own whoever you are.
Yeah.
And something happened here. Something got shorted here, because when she announced she was gay, something must have happened.
Yeah.
No, you aren't. Yes, you are. How can you do this? And you can't do that. That's not on you, Liz. That's on your parents or your husband, or husband's parents.
Her family. It sounds like her extended family or something.
But you got to carry yourself. You're gay, so what? And good for you. And
I think old Liz needs to adopt a brand new attitude, which is, I come to my daughter's defense when people are full of shit. Which I don't really care. When people are full of shit, you got to stand up.
I do. I mean,
yeah. Right? The family's like, oh my God, she's gay and she touched me. It's like, yeah, she came. She touched you. What the F is the matter with that? So what?
And it all goes back to stigma, and there should be nothing involved with that. Unless you're doing something, you know, completely inappropriate in public, which I'm sure she's not.
And she should conduct herself however she pleases in public. And my thinking is,
she's gay. Look out!
I know. Let me try to be a little more empathic towards Liz. It's hard when I'm not. You know, it's a letter. It's easy to get outraged. But from Liz's perspective, she needs to be more sophisticated about what her daughter's life is like, what it means to be her daughter, what it is to be a gay woman. She needs to come up to speed, the Liz. And whether it's hanging out, go to retreat, not with moms of gay daughters, with other women who are gay. You have to spend time seeing the world through their perspective, understanding how they work and how they feel, and then watch how other people react to them, and so you can – not create trouble and not, you know, not be offended, you know, be
well, the the LGBT community.
Yeah.
It's LGBT community.
Well, it's got a bunch of other acronyms on it, too. Okay. Go ahead.
Whatever it is. It's LGBT to me. Yeah. They have a tremendous support system on their website where you can go, and there's reading like anything else, but real reading material. And I know reading something doesn't solve anything, but there are, you know, for people who
But this woman needs that kind of – she needs to be up to speed. Like, she needs to understand more.
Like in recovery, there are so many things you can look at, what it's like to be in recovery, how to – you know, what these feelings mean. And I know that LGBT has just a massive amount of educational materials.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And please bring it – get yourself up to speed, Liz. I'm sorry if what I said seems outraged at your letter.
It's hard to hear
some of the juxtapositions of your thoughts suggest a real deep stigmatizing attitude and a lack of understanding of who your daughter is and what she's experiencing. And calm down. Bottom line, calm down. Should we talk about ProFlowers or do another letter first?
Let's talk about ProFlowers and then a letter.
All right. ProFlowers.
I thought you said Profilers.
ProFlowers. ProFlowers, your buddies that got the flowers to your sister through a
snowstorm.
Through a snowstorm with a day's notice. In Wisconsin on Valentine's Day. Now you can surprise your loved one with a beautiful 100-bloom bouquet plus a free glass vase. It's from proflowers.com for $19.99. You can upgrade to 100 blooms with a pink vase and chocolates for just $9.99 more. Use the code Adam and Drew to get the special price on your Mother's Day order while supplies last. It's guaranteed to last a full week, which is a pretty bold guarantee. Get your money back if these 100 blooms do not last the full week. Go to proflowers.com, click the blue microphone at the top of the right corner, and type in Adam, A-N-D, Adam and Drew. The deal expires Friday at midnight, so you want to get that order in right now. $19.99 for a 100 bloom bouquet. If you want to upgrade to the pink vase and the chocolates, $9.99 more.
Is your mom around?
Yeah, mom is.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
See, my flowers go to a cemetery.
Oh.
And I always say that if your mom is around, no matter what your relationship, give her a call.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because I would give up a lot, almost everything, to have one more day with my mom.
Yeah, it's interesting when your parents pass how much you think, oh, if I just had one more conversation.
Well, I got all my – you and I have talked about this. I got mine all out of the way while she was dying. But still, she never got to see – a lot of the good and any of the bad, and then the good again.
So. Yeah.
But she would have – I was kind of an ornament.
When did she die? What year?
2000.
Oh, so she saw a lot of the good.
Drama the Gifted Child. That's what I was, basically.
Well, it's funny. I brought that up on the DrDrew.com podcast, Dr. Drew podcast, because that was very much
Jesus, my – how many podcasts do you have?
I got a couple of them. But that was my story too. That book was very meaningful to me, The Drama of the Gifted Child. We have it up on the website at drdrew.com. You can get it at Amazon. It's a classic.
Yeah. The original name was Prisoners of Childhood.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. I don't know that. Yeah.
But basically what it was that your parents would use you as an ornament, and you grew up thinking that you were
– well, your needs are never genuinely supported.
Right.
You're there to support the needs of others.
Yeah. And my mom was – when I got famous, that was the greatest day of her life. That and the invention of the crock pot. But when I got famous, man, that was it for the rest of my siblings. Bye bye.
Oh, yeah. And see, so that suggests that she had kind of a narcissistic bent. That she.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love you, Mom. I don't mean that.
Yeah, yeah. That's just a fact. All right, Chris. More letters.
All right. This is from CJ. Hello, Dr. Drew and Adam, or Phil and co-host. I'm a 26-year-old male from California, and I'm still a virgin for no specific reason other than I'm simply not interested in, as Adam might say, getting my dick wet. I generally have no sex drive, get erections about once every 3 or 4 months, and masturbate once or twice a year, if that. This has been true for the past 4 or 5 years, but before that, I was a normal, horny young adult. I'm 5'11 and a healthy, non-anorexic 120 pounds. Am in good physical health, get 2 to 3 hours of exercise daily, and don't have any emotional or dependence issues.
He's absolutely not in good physical health. That needs a medical evaluation immediately.
The highest 5'11", 120?
Yeah, that seems a little light.
That's Tiny Tim.
I can't believe that's not a typo, number one. But number two, that is a prolactinoma until proven otherwise. There are pituitary tumors that develop in young adulthood that shut down testosterone completely.
That's what he asked. He said, might it be low testosterone, and is there any danger there if it is?
Yes.
There's something wrong there,
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. When men have a drop in libido or frequency of erection or masturbatory function, that is a medical problem.
Is it hormonal growth or no?
Yeah, it can screw with his bone density and things. But it's an expanding tumor in the pituitary typically. It can cause brain damage even. But what was the last comment?
My doctor told me about 2 years ago that I was slightly anemic, but didn't elaborate any further. I don't have health insurance, so I was wondering if this was something I should really be concerned with.
First of all, not having health insurance is going to cost you. There's this Affordable Care Act, by the way, so sign up for the goddamn health insurance. Anybody? Any problems, anybody with that?
And stay off the internet. I mean, I think – you know, once you go on the internet and try to diagnose yourself.
Oh, please. This is the thing that people don't understand, that when you see a physician, you are not going there for his or her knowledge. The knowledge has been in his or her head since the second year of medical school.
Right.
What you're going for is the application of their skill and knowledge that develops wisdom and ability to make a judgment call in your particular circumstance. And that takes years and years and years of experience. Yeah. And so, yes, anemia, yeah, it's got thousands of causes. Don't go read about it. We have to – your doctor can zero in on what the likely associations are in your particular syndrome.
You know, I'm in the sun too much. You can see this here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just saw my skin doctor, who's a very famous guy here in L.A. I don't know why I said that, but he's very good. He's a plastic surgeon and a skin doctor. I saw him in the restaurant. He said, "Let me go. Come in and let me look at this on your head." So he looked at it. It's a basal cell. He said, just take it off. But in the course of it, he found this little dot here under my eye. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that he said that's melanoma, early melanoma, which in late stages. So he says, "And don't worry, don't lose any sleep." He said, "There's ways we can put a little chemo in there and you'll never miss a day on TV, whatever." Of course, I go home. And
you look up melanoma.
Look up melanoma, and I'm dead tomorrow, right? Yeah. And then the first thing I see is these guys with no eyes, and their noses are gone. So you have to listen to and then I wrote him and said, "Should I be worried?" He goes, "No." So the way it looks, just get it done at some point in the next couple of years. But, you know, this guy.
It's probably called a lentigo maligna, which is a relative of melanoma.
I mean, you see it. I mean, it's just a little thing here.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's never so little when you get the word cancer attached to it. But 5'11", 120, I am not a doctor. Although when I'm with Drew, I sound like one, don't I? there's something going on there with his body.
Well, I hope that was a mistake.
How many erections did he have?
Two a year, or somebody said. Two a month or something. It's biological.
I've had prostate cancer, and I get one every day.
Well, let's talk about prostate cancer, because I've been through that too. Yeah. We had this. Can we talk about it?
Sure.
Because you never talk about it. I've been talking about it a lot.
No, I talk about it.
Do you? Because I think it's important. It's so common for men, and men are so freaked out by it. I'm working with an organization called the Prostate Cancer Foundation, pcf.org. Please check them out. They're awesome. Yeah.
I'd like to work with them, because I when I was doing my radio show, I get a lot of people on, a lot of athletes. And I'm scornful at men who don't get checked.
It's ridiculous.
How's your boner?
Everything's normal.
Yeah.
Completely normal. And you just don't make semen. That's the part that people – I heard Howard Stern talking to a guy that has prostate out, and he was freaking out about that part.
Well, because some women like –
Whatever. Most think it's just not such a mess. It's nice. But everything else functions completely normally.
In other words, your wife, you're not to say most women.
No, I would imagine my wife likes the lack of mess, but I would imagine most women would also appreciate the same. But I had a tough time with the operation. It's a big operation.
See, I didn't.
Yeah, I know. You got right
did
back
you do,
to
– You didn't – did you
– Robot.
You did robot.
Yeah, same surgeon.
We had the same doctor.
Same surgeon.
I'll tell you, I got diagnosed because I had a neck injury because I fell down some stairs drinking. And so in the course of that diagnosis, they found out that – so I went in, got it taken out with the same doctor who was the guy, at least I consider him. And when they woke me up, they said, "Mr. O'Brien," and the big concern always is, will I ever be able to get an erection again?
Well,
that's why men actually die.
Yes.
You know, who was it that said, I think it was Oscar, somebody said, people would rather die than change.
Yeah.
And I know men who got the wrong operation, did the wrong thing, who have been on Vicodin and Oxycontin for like 10 years.
Ever since?
Yeah, because they had some sort of weird. But when they woke me up, they said, "Your porn career will continue." And I think we might be exceptions.
Well,
you had a problem after the surgery a little bit, right?
Just the surgery itself. I mean, I was so messed up. I was so weak and out of it for like six months.
I went back to work in 4 days.
I went back to work in 10 days, and I thought I was
fine. I did it in four.
I thought I was fine. You know, I thought I was good, but in retrospect, I was not. I just only started to really feel good. In fact, the biopsies were fucking me up. I was on an active surveillance program where they were biopsying me regularly, which I loved because I was like, avoid the surgery for a while. Fantastic. And it started to grow, and they pulled the trigger, and it was just in the nick of time. But sticking a needle 20 times through your rectum and your prostate – I got infected every time, and I felt terrible for like months afterwards. So I really wasn't right for years.
Well, yeah. So I was lucky because when I got diagnosed, they looked at it. Our doctor said, "You know what? Skip, just go."
Yeah.
And I said, "Really?" He said, "I'm telling you, just
do it now.
Do it now." And we arranged to have it done right away. So I was lucky in that regard.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, if you're a man out there and afraid to have someone put a finger up your butt,
You're crazy. You're
nuts.
Yeah.
You're committing suicide.
And as far as this surgery goes, the nerves to the penis that give you an erection sit along the base of the prostate. They're actually up stuck against the prostate. And so a good surgeon has to come in and dissect that all the way. And if you even stretch the nerve a little bit, you can damage it and it can fuck up your ability to have erection. But with the robotics now, they go in, they dissect everything with it, take out the prostate, done.
Yeah, I think I'm getting an erection talking about it.
You know, I turn you on a lot. It's such a cool conversation. But the point is,
but a lot of guys do have a problem. So you got to get the right doctor too, and don't wait. This waiting around stuff,
right? And if you're under the age of 60, you probably should have the operation, just generally speaking. Bang. And after 65, 70, external beam radiation, watchful waiting, all these things are good options. But early, the operation is the way to go because it can really it can kill you easy.
The other thing is Obamacare or whatever insurance you can find. Somebody was
show
our last one saying insurance. That's insane.
All right, last letter, real quick, Chris.
All right, this is from
Chris. You're doing a great job on the reading.
Thank you.
Thanks,
well done.
Pat.
Very dramatic reading.
This is from Chaim or Chaim, C-H-A-I-M. Chaim. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I was doing good on the reading. I'm recovering from Adderall addiction.
Oof.
I used to always take my Adderall with Red Bull. Now, when I drink Red Bull alone, I believe I still feel some similar, milder effects, almost like an echo of the Adderall.
Yes.
This doesn't happen with any other energy drink. Is it possible there's some sort of a Pavlovian effect going on here?
Yes, there is. With stimulants, it's very much that way.
What do you mean?
That just the experience of even like anything that stimulates you is reminiscent of being high on stimulants. And so people will be very gratified by, you know, feeling manic-y or for or taking Red Bull or drinking a lot of coffee or smoking a lot of cigarettes. You know, people, you'll notice stimulant users will smoke cigars and cigarettes and stuff. And it is somewhat of a throwback. It's not a relapse, but it is something you have to be careful with because it is an echo of their past experience.
Two things I've never ever done.
Oh, yeah. He just wants to know if he should be avoiding it.
Why? It's like drinking near beer if you're an alcoholic. Why fuck with it?
No. People who drink near beer are still not in recovery.
You're
5% alcohol.
But you're toying with something that's unnecessary. Even let's say it were 0%, don't fuck with it. Don't do that. It's challenging yourself, and challenging yourself always means you're not capitulated to understanding you have no control.
Well, I'm not embarrassed to say, but I still smoke a little bit. And it keeps me even my doctor, who you would know, said – and I quit for 15 years. But when I went into rehab, I said, I don't know how much – he goes, smoke.
Yeah.
But I get my lungs tested all the time and I'm good and all that. I think I am, but that's me talking to myself. And
yeah,
you've got to
be careful with cigarettes. There's a good way to help you too now. There's replacement patches and things and there's chanting and stuff.
A good Christopher Lawford said he quit by just talking himself into, I don't smoke anymore. Instead of I quit, he just goes, I don't smoke anymore.
I'm not a smoker.
But two things I've never had is a Red Bull or macaroni and cheese.
You're missing
in
out.
In my whole life.
You're missing out with the macaroni.
I grew up Lincoln poor. You'd think I would have grown up on it.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
I'm going to bring some mac and cheese next time you
now
come
into your
podcast.
Now it's a novelty. Now it's got to be sustained just because of the novelty.
Yeah, right now I'm on a roll. But the fact that I grew up on the tracks in South Dakota, that I never had mac and my mom was a terrible cook, but we had bologna and Spam and all that.
Lovely.
Nothing, no mac and cheese. And now it's like – at the Waverly Inn in New York, it's $45
for the macaroni
and
cheese.
For mac and cheese, yeah.
I've been to the Waverly Inn, strange enough. I love that place. Yeah. Yes, that's a great on Bank Street.
How'd you get in?
Jeff Zucker's secretary got me in. So.
You know, who gets me in Sean. His buddy's the maitre d' there.
Wow,
from NYU.
No kidding. I really enjoyed that place. All right, Pat, thank you so much for sitting in front of us. It's been a pleasure. It's always a privilege.
I love you. It's always been
love me. You too. I will get to reading your book. I promise I'll get on it.
You'll love
it. I know it's going to happen. I'm going to be like writing a long email like, oh, my God, Pat, I didn't know. So I'll have a reaction, I'm sure. So, all right, guys, that does it for the Adam and Dr. Drew Show. And thank you and mahalo.
Mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.